Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This week, we are discussing over 30 upcoming movies with our 2023 movie release extravaganza. Let's get on with the show. You can also hear our TV version last week, so that's in the feed. So if you want to hear the TV releases coming out in 2023, you can go back and check that one out. But otherwise, this is Aaron Peterson. I'm joined by my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey guys, how you guys all doing?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And Troy Heinrichs.
I thought we talked about that I was supposed to be first because I'm the one that's always here.
That's fair. I think we should draw some names or something. We should figure this out.
John is still making fun of my eyebrows right now. I just need you guys to understand. I don't even have my video on and he's still making fun of my eyebrows.
They're burned in my brain right now. I can't help it.
I've literally done nothing different to them. It may just be my face today.
You want
to
add some context? Because it's an audio podcast.
John's judging my eyebrows. I feel like we established that.
Yeah. She's got those 1950s super high arched, practically penciled in eyebrows right now.
They're the same as they always are, but obviously I gotta change something now.
Those are not the same thing. I know it's been a little while since I've seen your face, but that's not the same thing. They always are.
Today was a bad day, okay? My face isn't looking good.
This is probably the first time in like a month that John and Amanda have seen each other.
Yeah, truly.
That is true.
Were you making a face at a baby or something and somebody slapped on you in the back and it got stuck that way?
God damn. This is brutal.
Jesus.
I think he's just been spent so much time on dating profiles that he's used to like seeing different eyebrows, and mine just must have shocked him because he goes for girls younger than me. So my eyebrow style is out of his range.
Wow.
To be fair, I'm also doing Aaron's method of negging women. There you go. It's been
Welcome to the dark side.
No, don't woo it.
Welcome to the dark side.
Hey, I'm so used to negging women now. It's like, hey, your eyebrows look like shit.
Second nature.
Well, I'm not rude. Jesus, man. I mean, there's a subtle art.
No, Amanda, you look lovely.
Nobody listening believes a goddamn word you're saying. All right. Remember, you can find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. There's a lot of bonus content on our Patreon feed. John's doing a Last of Us show where he's focusing on the show episode by episode. So you can check that out now at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And we'll have a bad movie night there as well. So we're going to talk about our most anticipated films of 2023. We also have expected box office hits and our listener poll, which we did in our Facebook group because you can't do polls on Twitter. So it's only Facebook. I'm sorry. I apologize. What do you want me to do?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. You technically can do polls on
you
Twitter.
You do polls of two or four. You can't do 40 movies.
If the TV series is only six episodes and they're half an hour each, does that make it a movie? Because it's still shorter than Babylon and Avatar?
No. It's got to be a movie. Stop looking for loopholes. Damn it. Okay. Are you ready? So let's start with your top five. And keep in mind, this is your top five outside of the ones that we already have in lists. So we'll be getting to some of the bigger movies here shortly. But what are your top five from other movies that we're looking forward to in 2023? And tell us what it's about, where it's going to be released to, and so on and so forth.
So my first movie I'm going to bring to the table today is a movie that probably made it on some sort of list, but I don't read and or pay attention to what everyone else tells me not to do. So I'm just going to go ahead and just do what I want anyways. And that's going to be Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. It comes out December 25th. If you don't know who Aquaman is, he's Jason Momoa. He's not actually Arthur. He's Jason Momoa. And he's going to be playing Aquaman again, probably the last time, because DC just can't do anything right. However, I'm excited to see Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, because I did enjoy Aquaman, and I do enjoy what remains of the Snyderverse. So that's my first movie. What do you guys say?
You know, I love me some Aquaman 1, but I am curious how the box office is going to do and some of the things that are going to come out with She Who Must Not Be Named, who is still attached to the film. I hope it doesn't have an impact for Jason Momoa.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one right there.
You guys really think
Jason Momoa impacts her in the movie, because that would be fun.
Wow. Do you guys really think it's going to be that big of a deal that she's in it?
No.
Yes.
I don't. Why, Amanda? Because you hate her that much?
No. It's not even about me. I'm just, those who are really against her, I feel like really align with the concept of putting your money where your mouth is. And so to be unsupportive of her and support the opposite side of things, I think people will speak with their money and boycott or not see the movie.
Oh my God.
We'll see that with The Flash too, but not to the same extent. But I mean, you had so much publicity around their court trial and that case, and everyone was so attached to it and doing TikTok threads on it and like all kinds of things, that I really do think that it's going to impact the film when it does come out.
You know what I call all that stuff? All that stuff, that TikToking, the court case, all that, it's called free press.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as bad press. Does spell my name right? And Aquaman is going to do just fine.
That is different now than it ever used to be. Bad press can still be bad press now. It could cost you your product.
If I was them, in this market, I would add a scene where she poo-poos in a seashell.
No!
Got stung by a bee. Oh.
Well, I'm just saying, I think it's a gross overreaction, and I, Amber Heard, this movie is going to be just fine. John, what's your next one?
They don't know when it's coming out yet, but on Netflix, we have somewhere around the third or fourth quarter of this year, we have Rebel Moon. Now, I had to go from one ex-Snyderverse thing to another Snyderverse thing of its own Snyderverse. So Rebel Moon, a peaceful colony on the edge of the galaxy, is threatened by armies of tyrannical regent named Belisarius. That sounds way too much to pronounce. But anyhow, the desperate citizens dispatch Korra, a young woman who has mysterious past, to seek warriors from nearby planets to help them challenge the regent. It looks incredible. I can't wait to see what Zack Snyder does with this. And I'm actually just really happy to see him move on from just being pigeonholed into the DC universe and do what really got our attention to begin with, which is fun action movies that have visuals that blow your mind.
So he's basically doing Avatar instead of on a planet. He's doing Avatar in space.
It's supposed to be Star Wars. He said it's his Star Wars.
It's his Star Wars?
Yeah. But on Netflix.
So his Star Wars with a bigger budget than the Star Wars, but on Netflix.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So just like he was doing his Marvel on something other than Disney?
Okay, moving right along. Blue Beetle on August 18th. Cobra Kai star, this is where it comes in. Zolo.
Mara Duena,
there we go. Plays Jamie Reyes, in DC's first superhero movie led by a Latino character. With a mysterious scarab binds Reyes' spine, he gains superpowers in a suit of blue alien armor. I love the comic. The comic is really great. I love the character of the Blue Beetle. I like how they've taken the iteration of him from the previous types of Blue Beetles and even worked the other Blue Beetles into the storyline of what Blue Beetle, the current iteration, is, where they were scientists who found the scarab and were studying it and built their lives around it, whereas the scarab itself gets affixed to him, and it turns into something where he becomes the heart of this killing machine, and the killing machine is trying to just kill everything in front of it, whereas he's teaching it how to be more people friendly.
I've never heard of this character ever.
I haven't either, but I also find it interesting that Sharon Stone is going to be a part of it.
Ooh, she was so good in Catwoman.
Oh.
All I heard John explain was Spider-Man takes Ultron to therapy.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad. All right, so moving right along to June 23rd, we have The Flash. Listen, it's The Flash. It's going to be interesting.
Said, listen.
apparently they're even. This is the part that really messes with my brain a little bit. DC has said they might stick with Ezra Miller as The Flash after this movie. that has to mean that this movie is going to be pretty amazing.
Now, I want to clarify that and nip that right in the bud. No, they have not. There was an article that came out that said that the studio would be open to it because he's going through mental health therapy and whatnot, Ezra Miller is. But I also would say they're not going to say he's cut before that movie comes out, because that's going to make that movie flop even more than they're worried about because of his bad press.
Why would people be invested if they're just going to scrap it afterwards?
So,
well,
If he makes some miracle progress and he's really out there, I don't know, showing up at homeless shelters and shit, maybe people will get on board with it. But man, he did some damage. He actually did some damage. But I also agree, most of the general public have no idea what happened with him, and they won't care.
Right. Other reasons to care is that we are going to see Michael Keaton back as Batman, and we're going to see Ben Affleck back as Batman, and we're going to see a bunch of other characters from the DC universe for the first time, where we're going to see Supergirl and a couple other characters, and multiple Flashes, apparently.
And Zod.
Yeah. So that's big news. That's going to be a big deal.
Now, Zod from Man of Steel or Zod from...
Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm. Man of Steel.
You know,
I will find him.
If you go back, actually, several episodes when we reviewed Black Adam, we had Zach Parkerson from the Gaming Outsider on because he had seen an early cut of the Flash trailer. And there's a lot of Man of Steel references in there. And I assume it's because of the time travel and whatnot. And they're working to incorporate Zod. But I feel like they're going to use this to move their DC, their new DC forward a little bit, I would think. Or not. Maybe they'll just start from scratch. Who knows? I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Since the Flash can go to multiple worlds and everything,
yeah,
and that's the idea. Like, they'll reboot DC on another Earth.
They could.
Earth 626 or whatever.
However it works.
At this point, do you think they've had their test screenings yet? Or do you think that they have. Must have been good enough that they...
Yeah. Through the roof.
Yeah, to maintain it. So it's really just at that point maintaining the publicity. And I would be really curious to see if they do retain Ezra Miller as the Flash, like things go well for this movie and they retain him and have him in like another, continue that character, whether it's a TV show or a movie, and maintain him as the Flash. I think that would be an interesting precedent to set, because we've worked so long under this guise that, like, you make a mistake and your entire career is over. Hmm. And even if you make multiple mistakes, it used to be kind of the opposite of where we're at right now, where you can make 100 mistakes and you would never get forgiven. Now we're on the other extreme where it's like, or you'd never get any sort of consequences. Now it's like you make one mistake and you encounter all the consequences. But if they were to change the precedent and say, like, oh, you know, you go to therapy, you do your recovery, you kind of improve as a person and show and demonstrate all of these things that, you know, you as essentially their employee are trying to do right by them by making these improvements, and you get to keep your job, that would be very interesting to see how Hollywood either adapts to that or not.
Well, that would be a normalization factor. I mean, that's what happens in corporate America, right? You do something that's like, that was kind of bad. Take 2 weeks, think about it, sit in your house, you know, basically like a, you know,
house arrest?
Out of school suspension.
Suspension, yeah.
Yeah, it's an out of school suspension, but you can still come back. Yeah, but then you're like on thin ice, right? You know, one more time, and then you're done.
I don't imagine if they made a Flash 2 that they would shoot in Hawaii, but
I don't think that they would let him into Hawaii. But yeah.
Well, let's just remember with people. Granted, the sort of things that he is being charged with and or having issues with do. They're problematic in the sense of, I think there was a little bit of like sex trafficking involved there, and or running a cult, and or beating up on women. Those are all really hard things to come back from. And if he's capable of doing it, good on him. Let's all remember that Robert Downey Jr. damn near destroyed his body to drugs and destroyed his life to drugs. And he was able to come back and become one of the most sought after or one of the more appreciated, let's just say, actors of the current era.
I don't think it's fair to equate those two. Robert Downey Jr. was an issue where he did damage to himself Ezra did damage to other people, allegedly. That's way different to me.
No, I know. I think I thought I said those are two different things. However, I was just saying that at the time in which Robert Downey Jr. was doing that, he was a pariah in Hollywood because of the insurance costs that he was raking in.
That's fair.
All right, back to movies.
All right, so my final movie is something that I'm super excited about. I'm actually the most excited about this than anything else. The only way that they can make this any more exciting for me is if Godzilla showed up, and that's Transformers Rise of the Beasts. That comes out June 9th. This is going to be the latest installment of the current iteration of the Transformers universe. It is going
stretching.
To...
I'm stretching. I'm very excited. My hand is not giving you a thumbs down. It is getting ready to applaud. Keep going.
So this is gonna follow a very popular cartoon from the 90s as far as some of the storyline is concerned, and that is the Beast Wars. Beast Wars technically takes place a long time after everything from the Transformer universe that we happen to know. However, because of, let's just do some fairy dust time travel accidents here, the Beast Wars ends up overlapping with what we know of Transformers now. We're going to see characters such as Optimus Primal, who is going to be voiced by Ron Perlman. We'll see Peter Dinklage, Pete Davidson, and a whole lot of other new characters coming on board, as well as the Autobots that you know very well, like Bumblebee and Optimus Prime. It is Beast Wars is something that a lot of people loved when it was on TV in the 90s. It is a very good show as far as storyline is concerned. I'm excited.
Unless someone says, me Grimlock. And then we see a Grimlock on here. I don't care.
I'm happy that you're excited.
Grimlock wasn't in Beast Wars.
I don't care.
I appreciated the undercurrent of smarminess, Amanda.
That's what I'm here for.
I would love to be excited. Look, Bumblebee was good. That surprised me. I would love to see another Bumblebee. I'm transformed out, man. There's nothing about it that can get me going right now. And I loved the first and the third Transformers and Bumblebee. But I'm just...
Well, this is like... This is more in line with that Bumblebee universe. It's not in line with the Michael Bay Transformer universe.
Yeah, maybe I'll get excited once I see a trailer. But right now, I just... I'm just...
There's been the giant monkey?
Six movies of... I don't need six Transformers movies ever.
Going to be like Star Trek, where like all the odd ones are bad and the even ones are good, except the reverse.
Okay, I am trying to say that maybe this is going to be okay because the Bumblebee movie. I will crap on the other Transformer movies all you want. I will do that with you guys. I'll do it happily. I hate those movies. I don't know if I can watch those movies ever again. I will sit down and watch Bumblebee over and over again. If they're going to do something in that vein when it comes to this Transformer movie, then that's great. But if they're going to Michael Bay it out with some 16-year-old girl who's running around and freaking fuck me pumps and shorts that are cutting up her ass for no good reason with her pop standing next to her, then I have a problem. But if they don't do that and they tell the story of Transformers and not that girl, I'm in.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Also, he's the most excited because this is the only non-DC thing on his list. Or is DC related.
That's funny.
Oh, no, it's not, because Rebel Moon is also on my list and that's not DC related.
I mean, it's DC adjacent.
Yeah, that's second.
It's 6 degrees.
It's more
of DC.
Star Wars adjacent than anything else.
It's DC adjacent. It's 6 degrees of DC.
Nope.
It's got Zack Snyder. DC adjacent.
Okay.
Is that your list?
That's my list.
Okay. My first one is Renfield. The trailer is out. Please, dear God, watch it. Nicholas Holt is Renfield, Dracula's lackey, and he wants to quit his job because he's got a very toxic relationship with his boss. His boss is Nicolas Cage, who also happens to be Dracula, and it comes out April 14th in theaters. I didn't want to see this until I saw the trailer, and after the trailer, I want to see nothing but this. I was super excited.
I have to admit, it looks
pretty
good. You
want to see it over and over and over again. You want to see it as much as Troy tried to watch Black Panther so he can win a bet.
That's funny. It does look fun. It does look good. I'm excited for it. Comes from Chris McKay.
Nick Cage going full Nick Cage and just doing his ridiculousness it's worth it for me. All right. A Haunting in Venice. Hercule Perot is now retired when he attends a seance where one of the guests is murdered. Kenneth Branagh returns as Perot, and the rest of the cast has Kelly Riley from Yellowstone, Michelle Yeoh, Jamie Dornan, Tina Fey, and it hits theaters or Hulu. I don't know which one, September 15th. But it has. But we did get a third one at least, and I love these movies, so I'm very, very excited. Anybody else, or did you not like Death on the Nile?
Oh, Death on the Nile is way better than Murder on the Orient Express.
Well, I won't say that. I will say that I liked both the movies, and I liked both movies primarily because of how they handle the characters. The mystery, I don't find it as mysterious as it should be, but I do like Kenneth Branagh doing this character a lot, and that's why I'm going to watch it.
I still haven't had an opportunity to finish Death on the Nile. I got partway into it, and I haven't finished it, but I did want to a lot. And I did like Murder on the Orient Express. I think I just got sidetracked, like busy. I had to pause it or something, and then I just didn't get to come back to it type of thing. But Kenneth Branagh is usually a good time, so I can't imagine that this is going to be a disaster.
I want him to combine his mustache with like modern man buns. I want him to like grow that thing out and just wrap it around the back of his head and tie it in a man bun. That's what I want to see.
His mustache is actually the hair tie, yes, for his man bun. Yep. That would be great. I like that.
I love it. Next up, Leave the World Behind, and that's on Netflix. Due to strange events occurring in the city, a black family returned to their summer cottage, which they have rented to a white family. As the strange events continue outside, tensions between the families rise. And since the description happens to point out that one's black and one's white, I'm assuming they're racially motivated. Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, Ethan Hawke, Mahala Harald, and Kevin Bacon. And it's directed by Mr. Robot Sam Esmail. So it's going to be smart. It's going to be a smart show or movie. Sorry.
I went cast. Sue Sam Esmail. I'm in.
I mean, he's a great writer. He's very, very smart.
Great writer.
Yeah.
Great writer. If you haven't seen Mr. Robot, you need to go see Mr. Robot. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I tried. I passed.
Okay. Maestro. Bradley Cooper is returning to directing. He wrote and directed this, as well
Hell
as
yes.
as well as stars as Leonard Bernstein in a film that pays respect to his life as well as his love with Felicia. Also has Maya Hawke, Matt Bomer, and more. And Bernstein, if you didn't know, is a renowned composer of film, TV, stage, and more. West Side Story, for instance. So it's, if you're a film lover, if you're a fan of the arts, you have heard his music, and that therefore this story, the fact that Bradley Cooper wants to tell this story, to me, just makes it even more compelling.
100%. Maya Hawke is also in it, and I've grown a deep fondness for her. Well, I was just mentioning that she's in it, that I'm excited for her.
Have you heard her music?
To be in it. I have.
It's good.
I watched her video.
I watched her video.
Everybody's watched that video. Yeah.
Everybody watched the video.
I think I hit puberty a few times while I was watching the video.
Jesus Christ. Matt Bomer, I love seeing him in work.
I don't think Jesus Christ has anything to do with that. I was, you know, if I was sitting there watching that video and Jesus Christ popped up next to me, I'd be like, you're in the wrong place, pal.
This is getting so inappropriate. Yes. Johnny has so much pent-up sexual tension that he just needs to take care of before he comes to the podcast.
It's kind of uncomfortable. Amanda, what were you saying about Matt Bomer?
I'm just excited to see him take part in some works like this again, and I'm curious what his role is going to be. I've been a very big fan of his for a long time, so I'm excited to see him in something. Unfortunately, even with his clothes on, you know, I get it.
Okay, well, like, does everybody have a problem? Like,
we can have. I had to do that just because Johnny.
Yeah,
Matt Bomer's hot.
Oh yeah, it's my fault that you want to see Matt Bomer naked. It's not Matt Bomer's fault.
I mean, that's what Magic Mike's for. I don't need it.
Oh my God. All right.
Is he going to be in the third one?
I don't think he's in the third one. Magic Mike's Last Dance. Nobody's got that on their list? Because it should be.
I have as an honorable mention. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. Good. Should be.
He should be able to answer the question of whether or not Matt Bomer's there or not.
I don't think he is. I don't think he's in the
find
third
out
one.
Before we get to honorable mentions. Now, my last movie is Ghosted on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
Not much is known about the plot, but it's a romantic action film starring Chris Evans and Ana de Armas. It was written by the writers of Deadpool. Like I said, it's Apple TV Plus. And originally it was going to be a reuniting of Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson, but she had to drop out. But Chris Evans and Ana de Armas reunited. It doesn't sound so bad either. So I'm in. I'm excited. Okay.
Well, good stuff.
To you, Amanda.
My top pick, my number one, is Scream 6, which comes out on March 10th.
I'm stunned.
To theaters. Yeah, who's shocked? Let me know. The film continues with the survivors of the latest Ghostface killings, sisters Samantha and Tara Carpenter and twins Chad and Mindy Meeks, leaving Woodsboro behind and starting a new chapter of their lives in New York City, only to again be plagued by a streak of murders by a new Ghostface killer. A lot of the marketing around this has been really fun and creative, and I'm curious where they're going to go with it. We obviously have some insight into some sad pieces that go into it, but I don't want to share anything, I guess, in case you don't keep up with the media. But I'm very much looking forward to the continual expansion of this franchise that never seems to end or die.
As long as they're not in New York for like just the last 15 minutes, because I remember Jason Takes Manhattan and it still haunts me. So as long as they're in New York the whole time, I think it'll be all right. What I don't understand with this movie, Amanda, is it's going to be about serial killers in New York City. How in the world do they ever think they'll get away with it? There are cameras in every single location in that city.
Good also, it's question. New York City. Like, every other person is a serial killer. If
I was just going to say that too, Johnny. Like, how are they going to narrow it down to Ghostface, though? Like, they're going to have to see his
It's like
mask.
The reveal is a whole town. It's just a whole section. It's a freaking mob of people.
It's the Upper West Side.
Yeah. It's the HOA. They all got together. That's what they did at their meetings. And you helped fund their murders.
I have a feeling that I just got the plot of a show that I've been having on the back burner. Just given to me.
Nice.
This is the crossover with Only Murders in the Building. Ghostface lives at the Arconia.
Nice.
God damn it, Troy. I just said, I think I just got the plot of a show that I've had on the back burner, and now you just confirmed it.
All right, what else you got?
My second one, which I know you guys have talked about, first and foremost, I should mention, I am in so much love with Winnie the Pooh. I have so much adoration for Winnie the Pooh. My nickname growing up was Pooh Bear. And so
We also know because Christopher Robin got a 10 out of 10. It was the greatest movie ever.
Because it deserved it. God damn it.
Okay.
But anyway, seeing Winnie the Pooh intersect with a horror slasher film is really, like, I don't know if it gets much sweeter than that. So Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which comes out February 15th. Can you talk about the timing here? I love it. Now feral and bloodthirsty. God, this description gets me every time. Winnie the Pooh and Piglet terrorize Christopher Robin and a group of young women at a remote house.
Like a day late for Valentine's Day, though. What a bummer.
All right, Justin, do you want to go ahead and just give this the 10 out of 10 that you want to give it?
Ah, I see what you did there. I appreciate that callback. I don't know if it'll be a 10 out of 10, but I am very excited for it.
I can promise you by the trailer, it will not, but it might be fun.
It will be fun.
Just remember, this is Christopher Robin after Valentine's Day. He was already there with the women the day before, and this is the morning after everybody shows up.
Yeah.
Was this some sort of crazy version of the morning after pill?
Yeah.
Hey, Christopher Robin's getting more action than you are, John.
Ooh. Oh, bother.
Oh, bother, that was so good. Okay, all right. Our favorite Eeyore. My third pick is called Red One. There's not a date announced yet, but it's going to have The Rock and Chris Evans. And do you really need me to tell you anything else for you to be into it? If so, what if I told you it was a Christmas movie so your holiday spirit can capture The Rock and Chris Evans just in time for the holidays and wrap that up in a beautiful box with a beautiful bow. A new twist on the Christmas mythology and creating, quote unquote, the most fun holiday universe, according to The Rock.
Always.
To enjoy. Imagine Hobbs meets Miracle on 34th Street. As soon as I saw that line from The Rock, I was like, I'm sold. I don't need much more.
I hope you love this so much so that I can shit all over it in a year.
The hierarchy has changed in the North Pole.
Yeah.
I couldn't make Black Adam work, so I'm taking Santa Claus now. Right. Santa Claus is mine.
And J.K. Simmons is playing Santa Claus, and he is jacked. He is jacked Simmons.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Jacked Simmons. That's funny. My next one is called 65, which comes out also on March 10th, so competing with Scream 6. This has the writing directing team of Scott Beck and Brian Woods, best known for writing A Quiet Place. And they helm a sci-fi thriller starring Adam Driver as an astronaut who crash lands on a foreign planet, only to discover he has landed on prehistoric Earth, 65 million years in the past to be exact, hence the title. The film is produced by Sam Raimi, and its score is composed by Danny Elfman. So I don't see this. I don't see how somebody messes this up. If they do, they get fired. That's all I gotta say. You don't have a job in Hollywood anymore because you have everything that you need.
Except a good title. To make this
successful. I don't care about the title that much. I don't think it's terrible, but.
I think it's terrible. Troy and I had this conversation about that title. So let me ask you guys. And by the way, the movie sounds great, man. I think it sounds cool. The trailer looks cool. It just looks interesting. And, you know, he's been doing great work the last few years. So I definitely want to see what he's got going on. Mm-hmm. But the title.
It could have been called Prehistoric. It could have been called Fossil. It could have been called.
But when you have number titles, I was telling Troy, I always have a hard time. Oh my God. Because when you put it in your shelf, in your physical media shelf, numbers obviously come before letters. But my brain is also like, but six. So my brain's like, but I kind of think it should be down in the S's. You know what I'm saying? So what do you guys think? Do you put numbers in the letter that corresponds with the number, or do you put it in the numbers? This is a very important question.
I have the best way to answer this. I love that this is a conundrum in your life.
Digital, and then it does it for you. That's what I say.
No, even that would be wrong. So go ahead, Amanda. I'm curious.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a comparison. We're going to use. We're going to just use 65 because we're talking about that movie.
Makes sense.
And then we're also going to use The Sixth Sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. If it has the actual number, then you go the numbers go first and then you go alphabetical. If it spells out the number, like The Sixth Sense, then it would go in alphabetical.
My brain doesn't like that.
Well, I don't know what to God tell your brain.
God damn it. If that's not a good idea, I don't know what it is.
It makes sense. It's just, I struggle with it. I know that's the proper way to do it. And that's why it'll be sorted in every digital library, like Troy was saying, but I have a hard time with it.
That is an interesting dilemma.
I have issues, but I love a good dinosaur movie. So I'm excited about 65.
A good dinosaur movie. The next one is, and the final one on my top five is The Killer, which also does not have a date announced. It is similar to the French comic book
Fincher.
Written by...
Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil it, but that's Fincher, right?
Is.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, yeah. So The Killer is about a professional assassin named Christian, a cold and methodical protagonist who is very good at his job, but grows a conscience when he feels lonely. Whenever Christian waits a long time to eliminate his next target, the killer believes that he's losing his mind. And even though this is very, like, by the book in terms of, like, the concept, you know, we have plenty of assassin movies. What's going to make this different?
Sure.
David Fincher is what's going to make this different. You know it. There's going to be some psychological component to it that's going to be hounding us while we're watching the movie. And that's what I'm looking forward to. There are so many talented directors, but there's not a ton. I could list, you know, on one to two hands how many directors I would jump the gun to go see a movie just because their name is attached to it. And David Fincher is one of them. So I'm very curious to see how this is going to turn into something much more complex and chaotic than any of us anticipate.
I'm pretty stoked. It's Fincher. You can't go wrong with Fincher. And also, I want to point out, this is a fun fact about her list. So Scream 6, this is how much she loves Scream, right? So we're going to be at South by Southwest, the film festival. When that movie comes out, there are 1,000 movies that are going to be playing in this damn thing. And she's like, can we go see Scream? And I'm, you know, we're at a film festival. I mean, there's all kinds of, Scream will be out in a week. Yeah, so can we figure out a way to go see Scream? This is so
we're
going to
be there Thursday.
This is apparently very, very important.
Was it like every other sentence where you were like, well, we're going to do this. Yeah, but Scream.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it's going to be like this. Scream.
I fully expect her to be sleeping when it's playing anyway, so.
Right.
Yeah. No, not for Scream. No way. I'll stay awake for that. Plus, I'm sure they'll have a 5 o'clock showing I can hop into.
Dear God.
Yeah, because she's like 105 years old, I guess.
I know,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's me. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
I'm a glutton for punishment because I'm going to go back to an old well and go see an M. Night Shyamalan film in February called Knock at the Cabin.
Rolling the dice.
Yeah,
you truly are.
M. Night's latest psychological horror. A family gets taken hostage by four strangers who demand their sacrifice to prevent an apocalypse. Stars Dave Bautista, Jonathan Groff, and Rupert Grint. It's a story based on author Paul J. Tremblay's The Cabin at the End of the World. It'll come out February 3rd. Then later on in the summer.
Hang on, before you move on.
Oh, yeah.
I, although none of his movies have really blown me away, right? I have to say, I really, really admire how he's doing his films now. He's making very, very small budget movies, so he can tell the exact story he wants to tell, and he doesn't have studio interference. A lot of times, he's bankrolling these movies himself.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are constantly bitching about, he's not original stuff, and da-da-da. Even though I haven't loved everything he's done, at least he's a director that's consistently doing original material. And I think that deserves to be noted.
I just wish he'd like
absolutely
get rid of his gimmick and just tell a good story.
But he does usually tell a good story. I mean, Split was great. So it's not like he doesn't, you know, get there.
But then Glass was kind of like, meh.
I like Glass. I like Glass.
Well, I liked Glass.
Yeah. I like Glass.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's not Split.
He's just become more hit or miss where he... You know, there was a time where he was just hit for everybody. And now it's like because of the way that the direction that he takes. And, you know, honestly, like Aaron said, I give him a lot of credit and a lot of props for just being in a position, first of all, because he built his career. Mm-hmm. But being able to do whatever the hell he wants that like creatively inspires him. And nobody can take that away from a director, from any creative artist. Of our own interpretation and takeaway. You know, if it gives them joy and it gives them happiness and like he's getting people jobs, he's getting them paid, right. Putting food on people's tables, you know, more power to him. If I don't like it, you know what? That means he's still got money out of me because he knows that he's more than likely going to get money out of all of us. It doesn't matter if we like it or not. We're still going to see the damn movies.
One could say
it works out for him
that he used to be unbreakable. And now audiences are split.
Okay, that's our show, everybody. Time to go.
Back to you, Troy.
Let's just hope we don't find a
what
lady in the water.
What is this, a news station?
Yeah. Back to you. Weather at 5.
Well, since everybody knows how much I love the panda, the red panda, I'm hoping that Pixar can redeem itself by going to a kind of inside-out feel when we go to a world with beings made of the four elements, water, fire, earth, and air. They all coexist in this upcoming 27th film where they follow the unlikely duo Ember, played by Leah Lewis, or voiced by Leah Lewis and Wade. They are going to be talking about their fundamental differences and discover that they have actually a lot of similarities. And the best part about this is that it is directed by Peter Sohn, who helmed Pixar's The Good Dinosaur, which... not a lot of people saw because that was the first year that Pixar did two movies in one year. And Good Dinosaur is just so, so well done. Recommend you all go see it if you have not. So I am stoked for Elemental on June 16th, Father's Day weekend.
And unlike Bob Chapek's reign for Disney, Bob Iger is now back over Disney. That sucker is going to hit in theaters, right? Because Bob Chapek kind of gave up on all animation. Everything went... the streaming route and really diluted the brand a lot.
Yes. Still don't understand why we have two different studios between Disney Animation and Pixar. That's just Disney Animation period, but
because the name still brings people in. Pixar does bring people in.
Right. But Pixar also has their own style versus a lot of the other Disney animations. So
yeah,
it's within
its
own style house.
But
so
see, we had this conversation that Red Panda was Disney Animation feeling and
Turning
Encanto
Red
was
Turning Red.
Turning
Red.
Yeah,
I was going to say, why do you keep saying Red Panda?
Because it's a red panda. It's annoying. It's on ADHD. I don't care. It sucked. It was terrible.
The disrespect.
Pixar still has its own branding within each movie. Whenever you see a Pixar movie, you know you're seeing a Pixar movie. The Disney side of it is a different story entirely. They have a different feel to every single story that fits the story. They don't do anything the way Pixar does. Pixar does have a bit of its own magic. And not to say that Disney is doing things bad. It's just that Disney adapts more to the story itself, whereas Pixar fits their style into the story.
I just want to know how Turning Red fits into the Pixar theory that they all are in the same world.
You gotta let this go. You really do. Just
Troy, we're moving past things at a quicker pace in 2023.
So what's your next?
That's why we're excited for Elemental to clear the slate and make it clean again.
Okay. What's next?
We're not gonna have any hard feelings though, because Jennifer Lawrence is gonna be starring in this coming of age dramedy.
That's funny. That was good. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
John left.
John exited the podcast. He said, between this and Aaron's joke, we're just done for the year.
Keep going.
Jennifer Lawrence stars in a coming-of-age dramedy from director Gene Stupinski, in which she also produces this. It's set in Montauk, New York. Lawrence's character answers a Craigslist ad from a mother calling for someone to date her son before he starts college. And so this is No Hard Feelings, coming out on June 23rd, the week after Elemental.
Can I sign up?
This is also what I say is Aaron writing Penthouse Forum. Dear Penthouse Forum, jackpot.
Yeah, I would write this.
Can I clarify, is she acting as a college-age student, or is she like a MILF that this college-age guy is going to get with?
I do not
know at this point.
I'm really curious how this is going to play out.
Is she going to get stuck in the garbage disposal? That's what I want to know. Nobody gets that?
You mean the dishwasher.
Yeah, or the dishwasher or the couch.
It's the dishwasher. It's the coffee table. It's the laundry. Oh, it's those places. Getting stuck in the garbage disposal is a different movie,
Aaron. What am I missing?
You don't want to know. Moving on.
The listeners probably do.
Too bad. Google it. Troy, you're up.
No, they've already figured it out, Amanda.
Well, because Jennifer Lawrence is starring in No Hard Feelings earlier in the year, she's not available for The Return of the Hunger Games. Mm. Yes, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes comes right before Thanksgiving on November 17th. This is set decades before the events that occurred in the original franchise. This is actually following one President Snow as a 18-year-old, and he's chosen to mentor District 12 tribute Lucy Gray Baird, played by Rachel Zegler, during the 10th annual Hunger Games. Hunter Schafer, Peter Dinklage, Viola Davis, Jason Schwartzman, all in this movie. It's going to be pretty decent, I think, to learn a little bit of backstory.
I Googled it, so I get it now. Probably shouldn't have Googled it.
Amanda was having her own Hunger Games because she was thirsty, I guess.
You should have went on incognito mode.
I really should have.
Are you excited about seeing this as a prequel? Like, are you really like legitimately excited about going backwards and whatnot? Because I
always thought Snow was an interesting character, so I am interested in seeing like how he kind of progresses and becomes the guy that we see in the current sequence. So yeah, this has me intrigued. And Rachel Zegler obviously can act and sing and stuff. And
is she gonna sing to him? Maybe. Snow, let it snow, let it snow.
It is a ballad of songbirds. So
that's fair. I honestly liked, you know, some of the other movies in the franchise, but I don't think that I feel like this is a franchise that's just like I'm over. Mm. So I don't know that I'll be checking it out, just from my perspective.
If it's better than the fourth movie, then I'll check it out. But that was abysmal.
Yeah, the fourth movie was terrible.
Horrible ending to that series.
This is no different than like going back to like Harry Potter and going to the, you know,
sure,
the prequel series that they did over there.
I'll give it a chance.
You didn't even name it. You were just like that prequel series that they did.
You know, that's slipping my mind. That, you know.
Fantastic Bitches.
That's it.
Fantastic Bitches.
All right. Is that it, Troy?
Yeah, that one.
No, and then of course, because we have to remake everything and go back to the beginning and do the prequels and all that fun stuff. December 15th for Christmas this year, you can go back and relive the magic of Willy Wonka as Timothée Chalamet stars as the eccentric chocolatier in this musical fantasy prequel based on the beloved character. Oh, we're actually going to learn finally how Willy Wonka meets the Impa Loompas.
Did you care?
That's what people really wanted to know.
Did you need to know that?
No, not really. But the cast does include Olivia Colman, Sally Hawkins, Keegan-Michael Key, Matthew Bainton, Matt Lucas, and Rowan Atkinson. So this could be fun. And it's, you know, from Roald Dahl's original. So there are some really good stories and really good books if you read the book versions of these things. So this could turn into something pretty magical for the holidays.
Yeah, you have my attention here. But if they end up going way too much in the realm of how... Tim Burton took his.
I will
have an issue with it. But if it's more like the original
Gene Wilder
only updated,
yeah,
the Gene Wilder only updated. If it's more like that, I'm totally in for this, and I'm interested.
I think it only depends on what color orange the Oompa Loompas are. That's going to make or break the film.
Oh my god!
Let me pitch an idea to you guys. Oh, all right, are you listening?
How about no?
How about I'm going to do it anyway, John? So shut the fuck up and listen.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Love you too. Think Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory meets the Black Phone, where it's a horror and the kids are being kidnapped and like put into this torture chamber of a basement.
Right.
Because they thought they were going to get a golden ticket.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't that just the first movie?
Yeah, isn't that the story?
Yeah. But I like darker, less like pretending like it's cheerful and happy and
have
uplifting.
You seen Willy Wonka, Amanda? Because it's some pretty dark shit. It's got bright colors and all that other stuff, but that shit's dark.
I know, but it like taints the minds of children into thinking that this is acceptable. What if we just label it like it is?
You want Winnie, and make it Winnie like the Pooh visits Willy Wonka?
Is that what we want? Yeah. Yes!
She wants Willy Wonka to be in the public domain so she can make the slasher film.
Yeah, right. 100%.
They squeeze a little girl to get all the blueberry juice out of her.
Ew, that sounds really that's wrong.
Gross description, but Willy Wonka, blood chocolate.
Blood chocolate.
Oh my god!
I want to see it. I'm in.
Oh, better yet,
we're gonna remake this movie, right, folks?
Hell yeah!
Blood orange and the Oompa Loompas are all slaughtered.
Oh,
I like that too. I thought blood orange as well, that's but I didn't know how to connect it. Good for you. On a lighter note.
Now we're going to run through top five box office expectations. Then we're going to hit the listener poll. But here's the expected big hits that didn't make the poll or our lists, okay? Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Ant-Man and the Wasp find themselves on the hunt for the quantum realm, where they're exploring the quantum realm, interacting with strange new creatures, and embarking on an adventure that pushes them beyond the limits of what they thought was possible. And it's the first real introduction of Kang the Conqueror. I know he was in Loki, but we finally get him in more of a full scope, because he's the big bad of the next phase of Marvel. Yes? Of the next phase?
So they say.
Yes, he's going to be the big bad, and we also get introduced to MODOK in this movie.
Cool. All right. So that's February 17th, very soon. Fast X, of course, May 19th. The continuing escapades of the Toretto spies. And this time, Jason Momoa, Brie Larson, and Alan Ritchson, that's right, Jack Reacher, joining the fun. So you got me excited with Momoa and Ritchson. So I'm sorry, Brie Larson used to be really like somebody that then Captain Marvel happened and just...
Wah, wah, wah.
Does anybody come back from the dead in this one?
Oh, I'm sure. There's rumors.
Yeah, actually, they're somebody does come back from the dead.
Don't want to tell you. But yeah, there's a rumor. No facts.
It's the kid that drove the Jetta in the first movie. He comes back from the dead.
Paul Walker comes back.
I mean, if Gal Gadot comes back, I'm in.
There's a rumor. Check out the rumors. Google it.
Check out the rumors pages.
Next up is The Little Mermaid, May 23rd. You've seen the trailer.
Yeah.
The youngest of King Triton's daughters, Ariel, is a beautiful and spirited young mermaid with a thirst for adventure. Longing to find out more about the world beyond the sea, Ariel visits the surface and, speaking of thirst, falls for the dashing Prince Eric. Following her heart, she makes a deal with the evil sea witch, Ursula, to experience life on land. Amanda, you said, yay, why are you excited for Little Mermaid?
Oh, I love the Little Mermaid. I love the original. And I love this this new actress who's going to be taking over the role and leading this revisited
Halle Bailey? Story.
Yeah, yeah. Say that three times fast and don't say Halle Berry.
I know, it's impossible.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But I do, as an adult, I do laugh at this story now because it's basically like homegirl wants dick. It's like the entire story. It's John on Bumble, but like a woman.
Who sings.
And don't forget, dad does not want grandchildren before the proper time.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
No, dad does. All right, Barbie, July 21st. After being expelled from Barbie Land for being a less than perfect looking doll, Barbie, played by Margot Robbie, sets off for the human world to find true happiness, and also has Ryan Gosling as Ken. Sounds a little bit like The Little Mermaid.
Honestly, it sounds like bullshit, because I think between all of us, we know that there's no possibility somebody's ever going to look at Margot Robbie and say, you're less than perfect. Get out of here. You're fired. You all lose your jobs, but it does look really good.
Also, the concept of the movie seemed really cool when you saw the original, like, concept arts and, you know, initial teasers and stuff. And then you read that description of the movie and you're just like, what kind of like misogynistic bullshit is this? Like, who's going to want to go watch this thing?
Greta Gerwig is behind this. I think this is going to be great. This is going to be great. I think this is going
to
be
fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be too.
I've read.
I think it'll be more progressive.
I hope so.
I've read multiple reports that the script is fantastic. Like, it's just, it's really tackling the struggle that women have, you know, especially with how everything's based on their physical appearance and whatnot. So I'm sure that's going to be a much smarter script than that sounds.
I really, really hope and anticipate even that they'll, to Aaron's point, they'll tap into how those societal expectations, even for everybody thinks like beautiful people have it easy, that their life is so not complicated, they get everything their way, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
And we all don't understand the different pressures that every person is under and their own expectations and how that all affects them. And so diving into like the mental health from that perspective too, that like, honestly, pretty people have problems too. And like, it can be brutal for them to always be expected to be A1 top tier, you know, never letting anybody down or disappointing them in terms of physical appearance. And then also wanting to like be recognized for more than just that. So I think it's going to be really great from that perspective. I think if you had a different director, it could go a very different direction, but I don't see Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling tapping into a story if it were like misogynistic or terrible.
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be a great movie.
And not in this culture.
And also, I mean, yeah, pretty people do have it a little easier. Come on, can we admit a little easier than ugly people do? It's just a fact.
Sure.
It's a fact.
Sure.
Pretty women don't pay for drinks very often. Is that not a fact? If they choose to drink them.
I don't know. I'm not a pretty person who gets free drinks. Tell us all about it, Aaron. What's the experience like?
It's pretty good. It's actually really nice. So every time ladies buy me alcohol, I feel pretty good about myself. And then I tell them.
Probably the same as when your wife gets drinks for free.
Yeah, she does way better than I do. That's how I get my drinks for free. She goes over and gets hit on and brings that shit back to the table.
You say, honey, here's what I want. And you write down a little sticky note. And she lifts up the sticky note and she's like, I would like a Jack Daniels. And I'm like,
do whatever
Coke.
You got to do. Do whatever you got to do. All right, coming out July 28th, The Marvels. The Marvels is an upcoming American superhero film based on Marvel Comics, featuring the characters of Carol Danvers, who's Captain Marvel, Kamala Khan, who's Miss Marvel, and Monica Rambeau. So it's got Brie Larson, Teyonah Parris, Iman Vellani. I have more hope for this one than I thought I was going to, because I really, really love Miss Marvel, her performance. I just feel like she has such a bundle of energy and excitement and just brings like a fresh face to the role. But Brie Larson, I'm sorry, is just a joy suck in that role. So I'm hoping that this gives me something different to get excited about. You guys?
Yeah, yep. I really want to see her can do something different. The teaser at the end of Miss Marvel, she pops up and she has a bit of a more of a lighter feel to her. So it's possible that we're going to see more of that in this. I hope so. But From what we've seen from Captain Marvel and from the rest of the Avengers movies that she showed us up in, like that personality is not there. But in the 5 seconds you see her in Ms. Marvel, she seems much more interesting. So I have high hopes for it.
Okay. Nobody else gives a shit. So let's move on to our listener top 10. This is, I'll go 10 to 1 of what listeners in our poll were most excited about. Number 10 was actually a tie, and it was Super Mario Movie. April 7th is one of them. It's-a-me, a Mario. It's a story of the Super Mario Brothers on the journey through the Mushroom Kingdom, and Chris Pratt voices Mario and has already been accused of New Jersey plumber's appropriation. So, yeah, people will find a way to hate on plumbers.
Go figure.
It looks cute. I mean, it looks cute. The other tie was Evil Dead Rise. Director Cronin gets a shot at Sam Raimi's Evil Dead franchise as we finally battle Deadites in a city as a family struggles to save themselves from an evil book of the dead. April 21st. I can't freaking wait.
Heck yes, indeed.
Trailer looks awesome.
Yeah, it does look really good. I'm happy for that.
Dune Part 2. Paul becomes the messiah for a bunch of nomads on Tatooine while also trying to become a massive drug lord who sells that sweet, sweet spice. Comes out November 3rd. I plan to bring a pillow and enjoy that one with my sweet sleeping.
The second part's better.
How do you know? You haven't seen it yet.
Because I read the book. Because I read the books.
Yeah, but on the same token, I mean, people thought the first part was supposed to be... I mean, the people raved about it. Oh, it was beautiful. I'm like, well, I mean, it was dusty.
The first movie does a great job of like finally getting the visuals of the story correct. It's just boring as sin.
Well, here's the part.
It's a lot of world building setup that you have to do. It's why George Lucas at least did something right when he started with Episode 4, because if he started with Phantom Menace, you would have gotten Dune.
Fair. Okay. Number 8, Oppenheimer. Chris Nolan returns with Cillian Murphy and Emily Blunt and Matt Damon to tell the story of Robert Oppenheimer and his role in developing the atomic bomb. I swear to God, nobody would want to see this movie if Chris Nolan wasn't directing it.
I disagree with that statement.
Entire reason.
I like all the things Manhattan Project related.
That sounds creepy. Why?
I don't know. I think it was ever since we saw The Day After when we were like in the 80s. It was like required viewing.
Yeah.
It's like anybody growing up in that like Cold War, scared for your life, you know, run to the fallout shelter drills that we had to do. So anything atomic bomb related is fascinating to me. It's actually why I got hooked on 24, because I was like, there's no way they're going to blow up an atomic bomb over the desert. Oh, they just blew up an atomic bomb over the desert. I'm watching this show.
Oh, man.
Honestly, the cast, though, is like incredibly stacked. Yeah. Like, I don't know how they managed to, I mean, it's Christopher Nolan, so I guess that's how they managed. Rami Malek, Matt Damon, Florence Pugh, Robert Downey Jr., Cillian Murphy, who looks incredible in that role.
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian, whatever his name is. I don't care. No, I'm just kidding. I do care. I'm sorry. Cillian Murphy. But they do look like on point in terms of like some of the stills that we've seen, or at least that I've seen. And I just cannot imagine that cast does not have the chemistry and atmosphere needed for it. And plus, we've all become really big fans of Florence Pugh. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
Well, and it doesn't even have to be any kind of Christopher Nolan spin to it, right? It doesn't have to be an Inception or an Interstellar or whatever. It could just be the story, and it would be good.
I hope he puts a twist on it.
I hope he puts a twist on it, because I think just the story alone is good enough. And then if he adds a twist and it works, it's going to be amazing.
This Tarantino's it. Number 7 is Cocaine Bear.
Tarantino.
Cocaine Bear. A big ass bear gets hopped up on cocaine and goes on a murderous rampage. And it's based on a true story. Granted, the true story ended, I'm sure, a little different than this one will. February 24th, Elizabeth Banks directs it and it stars Kerry Russell. It looks insane.
I already have my plans. I'm ready to see it.
I'm ready to see it too. The story when it broke a couple years ago was ridiculous, and then what they're going to turn it into is, I can't even believe that they got this cast to do this movie. So the fact that they got this cast, even it is so much going to be it's just going to be dumb. It's going to be that movie, like as Aaron says, you're going to undo the latch to your head. Mm-hmm. You're going to take your brain out. You're going to dust off some shit, and then you're going to throw it out the window because you don't need it for this movie. And I'm here for it.
John, you know what this concept reminds me of? It reminds me of the wildness and absurdity behind Velociraptor, where like some, but like if they had a budget,
yes,
they had a budget to be able to cast and get right props and things like that and effects.
Which I think I read someplace that Velociraptor is getting a sequel. So,
or oh Velocipaster
is getting a sequel. So I just corrected myself. Thank you, Troy. I like that kind of idiocy.
I had no interest in seeing this, and then Aaron said Carrie Russell, and I've seen everything Carrie Russell's in, so damn it.
I don't see how you can watch the trailer and not want to see this. So watch the trailer, and you'll feel better about it. All right, moving on. Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, March 31st, a charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on an epic quest to retrieve a lost relic, but things go dangerously awry. So it's Chris Pine, Michelle Rodriguez, Roger Jean Page, and it's from the Game Night team of John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein. There is nothing about this that doesn't make me smile. I'm in. I'm so in.
I talked about on our TV episode, I love Dungeons & Dragons. I love the fact that Dungeons & Dragons is being taken seriously by so many things. I can't wait for this movie, because it's not only is it Dungeons and Dragons, but it seems to be capturing the actual spirit of Dungeons and Dragons, which is to have normal people playing people who are heroes but are bad at it, and the comedy that sort of ensues by these real life situations. Sure, there's moments where they get to be real badasses and enjoy themselves, but or look really cool, but at the same time, they're supposed to be idiots, because the people who are playing Dungeons and Dragons are normally idiots.
Jeez. I take offense to that. Also, like a personal attack.
I'm one of them.
John was looking in the camera directly into my soul, and he's like, the people who play Dungeons and Dragons are idiots. Hey.
They are.
I'm one of them. And I got to tell you.
You enter a room with 10 crypts that are closed and the shiny object on the thing. What do? I take shiny object. Thousands of skeletons come out of the crypts and you die.
Right. I'm usually trying to be the comic relief of my party whenever I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons. So I usually find the dumbest. And also, I'm trying to move the story along for the DM while I'm playing. So if I can keep the story moving and do something stupid, I will do that 100 times out of 100.
You sound like the type of player who the DM has to, it's like, can I do this? And the DM's like, well, there's not a rule that says you can't, but it's going to be a nightmare to think about the logistics behind it and think about the math. And John's like, okay, so I'm going to do that. Yeah, I'm going to do that right now. But if I don't see Fireball happen in this movie, I'm going to be so upset.
We'll see what happens. And there's a TV show that just got greenlit, too. So you're going to get a lot of Dungeons & Dragons in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Next up, number 5, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Part 1. Ethan Hunt is back on the case with the team for Part 1 of Dead Reckoning. More stunts, more Ethan Hunt, more action. July 14th, and Haley Atwell is in it. So, yeah, please.
Yes. I'm in.
Sold.
What?
Sold.
You say fold?
Stamp of approval. Sold.
Bold?
Sold.
Oh, sold.
Like he is sold on Understood. The idea.
I apologize. I was not hearing you correctly. And I don't know what
the stamp is.
Yeah, he's doing hand gestures and talking with marbles in his mouth. Jesus.
Okay. Number 4, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Miles Morales coming out for another adventure across Spider-Verse. Comes out June 2nd. Everybody pretty stoked for this one?
Mold.
Yes. I was surprised. I was surprised by the first one. I'm excited for this one. I can't wait.
That's going to be awesome.
The first one was like one of my, I think it actually did make my number one movie for the decade when we did that episode. So I am more than ecstatically looking forward to this one. And I really hope that it lives up to expectations. They've worked on it for many years, though. So I think they probably have every piece in place, and the animation, there's no way it's not as fantastic as the first one. So
it's got to be better than, you know, Morpheus. So number three, John Wick 4. John Wick figures out how to defeat the High Table. But first, he's got to take on one more massive villain before his plan can go into action. What do you guys think? I'm serious question. John Wick is now on the fourth movie. It's become this massive franchise. It's doing a spinoff with Ballerina with Ana de Armas. Do you feel like that's too much Wick, or is this the exact right amount of Wick?
As long as the stunts keep getting bigger and better, and the killings keep getting awesomer and grosser, does it, whatever. Keep it coming.
I don't see it being a problem, because it's a John Wick movie every couple of years versus being three John Wick movies in 1 year.
And so six John Wick TV shows in between.
Right.
What is this too much John Wick you speak of?
Just checking.
Where do you fall on it, Aaron?
I love John Wick. And as long as Chad Stahelski is still directing it, I'm in, and he still is behind it. Mm-hmm. So supposedly, they're making one more, Chapter 5, and that will be the end of the John Wick saga. And this comes out March 24th. I didn't say that. I'm sorry. But what I have found really fascinating and amazing about this is the movie started with the most simple plot in the world, with just a couple clever touches with the Continental and whatnot. And they have managed to expand this into this worldwide adventure thriller fantastic martial arts display event, Gung Fu and everything else. And it's phenomenal to me because, well, number one, Keanu Reeves, you know, is always better with action than he is with actual talking, but he is, even at his age, he's still moving as fluid as I've ever seen from so many people that wish they could move that fast. He's older than me, and I cannot move like that. I just can't. Something would hurt for the next 4 days. I'm always impressed with that. And I'm impressed with the world they've created and expanded on and just created this like fascinating saga that who thought this would happen with this film?
Do you think that there's a chance they'll do like a surprise screening of it at South By?
Comes out March 24th. Yes, because I could see that as a possibility. And if it is, I promise, man, we'll find a way to go.
I will do whatever it takes. I will be
easy.
I'm trying to think of a girl name that rhymes with John. He's like, stop talking. You're not going to do anything.
No, you're not.
I'll probably be asleep. Let's be honest. But I will make it if we can get into it.
It would be a midnight show and you would never make it. So I would see it without you. So number two.
I'll start getting ready at 2 p.m.
Number two is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Comes out June 30th. Indiana Jones picks up the whip and hat with his goddaughter, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, for one final adventure. And yes, Mutt does not show up in this movie. They will explain his absence, though, which I assume is Harrison Ford didn't want to have to punch somebody in the face. Because he...
and is I know that a lot of Shia's people... character?
What's that?
Was that Shia's character?
Yeah, that was Shia's character.
Yes. Okay.
His son. They're going to have to explain his son away.
And he has a daughter. So we're going to have the conversation
Goddaughter.
Goddaughter.
Oh, I was going to say, because maybe they're going to go trans or something. That'd be interesting.
What? No. Jesus. And it takes place in 1969. And what I want to say is, you know, a lot of people.
I bet 69. It does.
A lot of people love to make.
We're children.
Jokes that Harrison Ford is too old for this shit, you know. And I got to say, I've been watching 1923, which he's on, and he's doing just fine. I have no doubt that James Mangold will make a very good movie. And I don't have any doubt now that Harrison Ford can keep up with what he needs to do.
You know what else happened in 1969?
What?
The moon landing. The Dial of Destiny. They could go to space and tie it into the aliens from the fourth movie.
Troy?
Don't do that.
This is shit that gets you disconnected. Like, really does.
I was going to say, he's going to punch you in the throat. He's going to drive to your house.
No more.
I'm going to ruin this as much as I can for Aaron because he's waiting for this for so long.
Ding dong. It's Aaron at your door to punch you in the face.
I want the legacy restored. I just found out from my friend Tyler, which is exciting news because I didn't know this was happening, but in my local theater local to me, they're going to start playing all of the Indiana Jones movies once a month. They're starting with Temple of Doom. So they're doing them in chronological order because Temple of Doom is a prequel. So they're going to do Temple of Doom, Raiders, and then Last Crusade, and then Crystal Skull, one a month until the release. And I felt like a kid again because I'm like, I get to see all of those in the theater again before the let. Absolutely. I can't wait. I am so excited.
Especially if they did it as like a 4K remaster or something. That'd be awesome.
I'm sure to look. I can't wait. I can't wait. And the number one for the listener poll, most anticipated of 2023 is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which comes out May 5th. Adam Wingard joins the fun. After purchasing Nowhere from the collector, the Guardians of the Galaxy attempt to make it a safe haven for alien refugees. But after a brutal attack, Peter Quill must lead the Guardians on one last dangerous mission to protect one of their members that could lead to the team dissolving. Now, this is James Gunn's last run at this. I know that for a fact. Gamora is going to come back. She'll be in this movie. And he's already hinted that characters could and probably will die. What do you guys feel about The Last Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, I wish they wouldn't have shared that.
Well, I said characters can and possibly will. I didn't say did
I didn't say you. I'm saying them. Like, keep it all hush-hush. Well,
we don't know if they're going to die.
I mean...
Well, now my head's thinking, who's going to die? You can't tell me somebody could and might and probably will die.
So what do you guys think about Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's going to be awesome. That's going to be the thing that we've been waiting for Marvel to actually like be like just wowed by in this phase. Cannot wait. The heart is going to be there. The magic is going to be there. The comedy is going to be there. The tears are going to be there. It's going to be all Mary Poppins'd up.
I'm just curious how they're going to beat the previous soundtracks.
That's James Gunn. He'll figure that out.
Oh, he'll figure that out. I've been listening to his soundtrack for Peacemaker, and it's amazing.
And the holiday special was great, too. Like, that had original
music. And the holiday special was great, too.
Had original music that was great. Maybe Kevin Bacon will come here, and he'll die in the movie.
No, but there's another character that's beloved to you that could die.
Who?
Isn't he still alive? Kurt Russell's?
No, he's dead. Ego? Oh,
he's dead.
My bad.
Ego?
Never mind. I'm like two movies behind in my head. I know.
There was literally a whole film about that. Like, it happened in that whole film.
Jesus. That was like 4 years ago, too. I don't know what happened to my brain.
I don't know, but you better do a rewatch before that thing comes out, because you'll be like, who's the raccoon?
Groot's an adult?
What just happened? I'm really excited to see how he ends it. You know, and a lot of people really struggle with the second one. They didn't like the whole Kurt Russell plotline because they felt like as a villain, I think it was very kind of abstract in a way in terms of how that character worked. And some people weren't, people like to see things that they can fight against. And I get it. This seems like it's going to be more straightforward in that respect. And we're supposed to get a lot more of Rocket's backstory. So we'll get some explanation as to what he went through. And
think
that will be very, very emotional, because one thing about this series that has always impressed me from day one is they have managed to make Rocket Raccoon probably one of the most relatable characters in the franchise.
For sure.
Which goes back to the question of, will they ever, ever get nominated for either supporting actor or best actor as a CGI creation?
Down the road. Sure. Down the road, probably. All right. Well, that's it with lists, but everybody's always got some honorable mentions. So same order. If you have an honorable mention, please spit it out. Please be a lot faster. You don't have to go through a whole thing, but what do you got?
My honorable mentions have already been mentioned in the list that we just had. I'm really excited for Mission Impossible, Shazam 2, and Equalizer 3 is one that I can't wait for.
Oh, man, I can't wait. You know, he's reunited with Dakota Fanning in that one from Man on Fire.
Oh, that's really cool. Yep.
That's neat. That's supposed to be coming out in September. Mine that I'm excited about, The Meg 2, sequel to The Meg, because it's Jason Statham fighting another giant shark, and there's no Ruby Rose. I think that's a win. Comes out August 4th, as of now. Expendables 4, which is about Lee Christmas this time, September 22nd. Jason Statham, once again, I guess I'm looking forward to some Statham stuff, takes over for Stallone as the Expendables lead, and they take on an arms dealer who commands a massive private army. It's got 50 Cent, Megan Fox, Dolph Lundgren, and Sly's going to pop up in a small role and a bunch of other action heroes.
Who? Who's going to pop up, Aaron?
A bunch of other action heroes?
No, you were supposed to talk in your Sly voice.
Oh, hey, yo.
That's disappointing. There he is.
Hey, I've been busy on Tulsa King. I ain't got time for that. You people. I want to talk about you people. A mixed couple have to learn to mingle with each other's families. Jonah Hill, Eddie Murphy, Nia Long, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, David Duchovny is on Netflix on January 27th. The trailer is freaking hysterical. Seeing Jonah Hill talk to Eddie Murphy about dating Eddie Murphy's daughter.
Oh, that's so funny.
It looks hysterical. Two quick ones. Havoc, which is Gareth Evans, directs Tom Hardy as a detective tearing his way through criminal underworld to rescue a politician's son for Netflix. And Argyle, which is Henry Cavill, stars as Argyle, the world's greatest spy, and director Matthew Vaughn describes this movie as Die Hard and Lethal Weapon-esque for Apple TV+. Die Hard and Lethal Weapon-esque. Yes, please. That's it.
On my list, one that I did mention, but something to keep an eye out for the ladies and the gays, Magic Mike's Last Dance on February 10th. You've got Haunted Mansion coming August 11th. If you're not familiar with that story, because it is a remake, a priest, a professor, and a paranormal investigator try to help a woman and her family after they unwittingly move into a haunted mansion in New Orleans. We also have the third Legally Blonde, with Reese Witherspoon returning sometime this year, but a date has not been announced. And there's a couple, this next one I think Aaron is really going to be interested in. It's called Killers of the Flower Moon. It's from Martin Scorsese. Comes out in May 2023. And it is about members of the oil-wealthy Osage Nation that are murdered under mysterious circumstances in the 1920s. I believe that one also has Leo, so I'm 100% going to see it. I'm curious. I'm not the biggest Scorsese fan, so I take that with a grain of salt.
I want to see it. I'm just sick of his comments about films he doesn't like. He just loves to...
Yeah.
Everything's so dumb. You guys make dumb movies and big blockbusters. You know, blah, blah, blah. Like, dude, you needed $200 million to make this Killers of the Flower Moon. That could have been made for $5 million. Shut up. I'm just tired of him, like, bagging on movies that aren't for him. If you don't like them, that's fine. Nobody has a problem with that, but stop shitting on other people's tastes all the time. And it feels like he can't miss an opportunity. He just did it again, like in a recent interviews. Just stop it. I mean, yes, you're one of America's greatest directors, but guess what? A lot of your stuff is derivative too. A lot of it. Gangs of New York, Goodfellas, Casino, same movie. I said it. Sorry.
Well, aside from that venting session Aaron just had, my last one is called Pain Hustlers, which is coming to Netflix sometime this year. And the film centers on Liza Drake, who's played by Emily Blunt, a high school dropout dreaming of a better life for her and her young daughter, who lands a job with a failing pharmaceutical startup in a yellowing strip mall in Central Florida. Liza's charm, guts, and drive catapult the company and her into the high life, where she soon finds herself at the center of a criminal conspiracy with deadly consequences. Aside from Emily Blunt, it also has Chris Evans, Catherine O'Hara, Andy Garcia, and a continual stacked cast that you'll want to check out. So I'm really excited for that coming to Netflix.
And everything I had has pretty much been taken. Shazam 2, Dune 2, Oppenheimer.
Shazam!
And Challengers. Coming out August 11th, starring Zendaya. It's the wife and coach of a famed tennis player in the middle of a losing streak signs him up for a challenger event where they discover he will compete against his wife's former lover.
I was wondering when we would see her in something a little bit on a smaller scale, because she's had Spider-Man and Dune and obviously her TV show. And I was hoping for something that kind of takes her to being able to take the screen time like she does in her show.
She wants that Oscar.
Good. She deserves an Oscar.
Just by showing up, apparently. She just deserves it. Yeah.
No, but Euphoria. I mean, if they gave Oscars for it.
I they do. They're Emmys, called but. Emmys. They're called Emmys.
I know, Aaron.
Well, I don't think she'll win an Oscar for this. It's a romantic sports comedy, and those usually don't get nominated by the
truly
artsy-fartsy people.
I know. D.B. Sweeney's still waiting for one from Cutting Edge. Like, what the hell? What a ripoff. Oh, boy.
That's a great performance.
It was.
I, Tanya, got some
yes,
notoriety.
Duncan Reed.
Who did?
I, Tanya.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I wouldn't call that a romantic comedy, though. That's
no, but he was talking sports.
Oh yeah, sure. There's romance in there though.
Cutting Edge is a great movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of sweet moments in I, Tanya.
Lots of them.
Yeah, I love when I get to cleanse my body in the blood of my enemies.
Okay. All right. Well,
that was the most Wednesday Addams line I've ever said in my life.
Or the most Tanya Harding one, but whichever way you want to lean, I guess. Pop culture. And there are obviously a lot of movies that we haven't talked about or we're not sure are going to come out. I mean, Ghostbusters Afterlife is slotted for December of 2023, the sequel to that film. But they haven't even started filming it yet. It doesn't film until March of this year. So you factor in special effects and everything else. I don't know if there's a guarantee you're going to see it this year. Beverly Hills Cop 4 has been filmed. It might come out on Netflix this year. I know that they're looking at it, but no guarantees. Hope to see that one. If that one comes out, I'll be super excited for that, as long as it doesn't, it's more like Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2 and not like Beverly Hills Cop 3. But so there's other stuff coming out. So keep an eye out of everything that's coming out this year. There's a lot of great movies coming out. I'm glad that we are back to the era of film. I feel like we've all been obsessed with so much TV because it was easier to make TV. They were making TV shows constantly, but now we're back to movies and theaters are getting packed with releases again, which is getting me excited as somebody who loves to see things in a theater. That is it for that section. We do have one movie review, which we're going to go to here in a second. Amanda and I are going to do for Alice Darling, which is an Anna Kendrick film that's coming out January 20th. But in the meantime, before we get there, you guys want to say anything in closing?
There's a lot of stuff coming out this year. So watch everything.
Yeah, good luck watching everything.
Don't go to work. Don't go to school. Just sit your ass on the couch. Don't move until you hear this exact episode next year.
Can you write me a note to work to excuse me?
To excuse me?
Yeah. He said don't go to work.
I don't think that works. Like,
don't
hey,
do anything.
My friend wrote me a note. Oh, well, then you don't have to work today. Good job. Thanks. That's not how it works. Now we're going to move into our review of Alice Darling. Okay, now we're going to review a film I saw that comes out January 20th with Anna Kendrick called Alice Darling.
A young woman is trapped in an abusive relationship and becomes the unwitting participant in an intervention staged by her two closest friends. It's directed by Mary Nighy, and it's her first full-length feature film. Aaron, this sounds like it's 180,000% up my alley. Is this would you say that there should be a trigger warning attached to it because it showcases the abuse, or is it more about the relationship between Anna Kendrick and her friends trying to get her out of this relationship?
Yeah, that's where I find it fascinating. I got this screener because it's Anna Kendrick and I'm like, all right, I mean, this looks interesting. I assumed it was going to be more of a, by the numbers thriller where, she's trying to break away from from psychological abuse. And then he's going to chase her down and there's going to be, a big conflict at the end and she ends up stabbing him to death and that kind of thing. That's what I expected. Not that at all. It's very much a psychological drama right up your alley, Amanda. I think you would get it, but there should definitely be a trigger warning because what is going on in the film is it's showing the effects of very small conditional manipulative abuse. And what I mean by that is Alice really has no idea how abused she is. She has gotten into a relationship with a handsome fella, charming guy, and she is slowly, methodically belittled and broken down into pieces to where it's hard for her to even remember who she is anymore. And what the film is doing, it's not really so much an intervention as they go away for, she goes away with her two best friends for her girlfriend's birthday and feels like she has to lie about that to start with because she doesn't have a very comfortable relationship. She's scared of anything that she's going to do anything that's going to upset her boyfriend. And once she gets there, they slowly start to piece together based on her actions and how she chooses to live her life, that there is an extreme amount of abuse going on and they want to help in any way, shape, they, or form they can.
Now, how does this explore potential like recovery from it or the after effects, I guess, if you will, of being in an abusive relationship? Does it explore PTSD and, you know, how to recover through that with therapy and some of the triggers she may experience? Or is it focused very much on like the present day?
It's very much on the present day. It's a character slowly gaining awareness to where she has gotten herself, you know, and she's very much looking at it like, I can't believe I allowed myself to get to this point, is where she's headed toward, right? But I think anyone that has been in a relationship, and I think most people have probably been in a relationship where the partner was constantly belittling you or nitpicking every little thing you did to the point where you were just afraid to do anything because nothing you did was good enough. You know what I'm talking about? I'm sure, I think almost everybody has had at least one of these. But some people end up being captured under the spell of these manipulators. And the breaking down of someone's soul, trying to rebuild that is very, very difficult to do. And the film is really about how she is slowly starting to realize it and slowly starting to see, like she sees glimpses. It's almost like as you start to figure out a murder mystery, you know, you start seeing the clues. And you start piecing it together and you start realizing, oh, I'm the victim here. And, you know, it's hard for her to come to that realization. A lot of that has to do with because she's removing herself from the situation for a week with her friends. She gets to see who she is again and also where she has gone mentally.
So this is according to the words of Anna Kendrick, a very personal film to her, one that she could personally relate to because she's experienced abusive relationships. And so that's actually where they tapped into to kind of help shape her character. Does that personal interaction for Anna Kendrick come across on the screen? Do you feel like you can see that she resonates with it, that it's very deep and personal?
Yeah, I would actually say this is her best performance that I've seen. It's a beautiful performance and not in a way that's uplifting in any way, shape, or form. It's just, I felt so horrible for her. I mean, as I'm watching it, because I understand how she got to where she is and how that character was feeling. Because I think most people have been there at least once in their life and they can relate. It's just some people don't get out safely. You know, they stay in it way too long and it just buries them. And that's the performance she is. And she is very defensive. Whenever anyone is trying to tell her that this is a situation you need to get out of, she's extremely defensive, erratic. You know, she can't let her phone even be out of her sight because she knows when he texts, she has to answer right away. If it's the middle of the night, she has to answer right away. You know, she has to be on top of it. She has to tell him what he needs to hear at all times. She can't ever let him feel like she failed. I mean, it's an obsession. And it's an obsession on both parties. You know, he's obsessed with controlling her and she's obsessed with letting him control her. And it's heartbreaking to watch because it felt real and it never felt like she was acting. It always felt like this is someone going through it right now, which is a compliment to her performance.
Mm. There's a line, a quote that she had shared in an interview, which I think really just touches on how extensive psychological abuse can be. And she had said that she had created so much self-doubt, or being in this relationship, her personally, Kendrick, had created so much self-doubt and people start to question their own reality. And the quote that she had shared is, "He's so convinced that I am a monster that I can't see how I am not." And I feel like that's mm-hmm. a really powerful mindset to take into a film like this where, from what I can find about the film and from what you've shared, it's less about her being physically abused, where it's an obvious sign of abuse and people quickly can jump to, you need to get out of this, you shouldn't be in this relationship, mm-hmm. versus the more complicated side of being in an abusive relationship, where the person kind of comes across, you know, maybe like a jerk, but to the point where people are like, you're being dramatic, or, you know, you should just deal with this, why are you complaining so much, that type of thing, that response that sometimes keeps people in these relationships too, because they don't have the support. And so I think her, from what I can tell, her alignment from her personal experience and this film's approach, very intentional approach to make it an abusive relationship that is by definition abusive, but from the perspective of others in society where abuse is somewhat normalized and rationalized in so many ways, women are just being dramatic and overly emotional. This is kind of that intermediary that's like, this isn't normal. This is not what you're supposed to endure in a relationship. This is not part of normal conflict. This is abuse. So do you feel like you really got that sense across too, that it was, I don't know, powerful in that sense in the writing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much, they cover both those bases. I mean, you've got two friends that she is on this trip with. One is Tess, who is more along the lines of, you know, get yourself out of this. You know, and then you have Sophie, who's much more understanding and relatable and compassionate. So, I mean, you have kind of both of those angles, and both of those friends learn different factors of Alice as they go through the movie, and also how they will handle things differently than how they would expect to handle them. So, I mean, it covers a lot of those bases, and it's really unique in that I don't know if I've seen this subject covered this smoothly or uniquely before. I mean, I probably haven't. I just don't remember. Can't think of anything off the top of my head. But I was specifically moved at how well they understood the emotional, psychological torture that goes into manipulative relationships like this.
Mm. So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give this film?
I give Alice Darling $7.50. It's not something where I would say you'll be entertained, but you will be moved. And it might make you to actually maybe even look at your own relationship or past relationships a little differently, which is always something to pay attention to. People never give anybody credit for maybe they can't get out of this. Maybe they need help to get out of that. It's not so easy as, why don't you just leave? And that's what this movie is talking to. It's talking to people that think that, saying it's not that easy.
Mm, I love that. I cannot wait to see it. And you said January 20th?
Mm-hmm. January 20th.
Alrighty.
Check it out. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our website is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Remember, support the show at Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, and you'll get John's Half Hour Power Hour and Bad Movie Night episodes as well. So there's a lot of bonus content there. Rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at RJohnDraws, Amanda on Smirk and at Sink Into This, Troy at Troy Heinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed, and me at Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, which are back to normal, it feels like, or stream comfortably on your couch because you still like it, buy popcorn. I'm not trying to couch shame anyone.
Sounds like it.
I spend a lot of time on my couch.
Did you get stuck in it?